Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Walls Do Talk. I'm your host, Gabrielle Weimer, and today I'm going to share a story with you about my very first homicide investigation as the lead investigator. And full transparency, I was scared shitless through this whole investigation because I was so worried that I was going to mess up. All right, so let me set the scene for you. It's in the middle of the night and I get a phone call. And they say, hey, we might have a body that's been dumped in a parking garage. We need you to head on out. So I go to the station, I load up my gear. I actually meet my supervisor there and she jumps in the van with me and we head on over. As we're rolling up to the scene, she casually turns to me and says, hey, you got this one, right? And I'm like, yeah, of course. But inside, I'm like, oh shit, no I don't. I do not got this. Please God, let her take over. But I smile and say, all right, let's go. So I get out of the van and it feels like I'm walking like in slow motion. And I see the parking structure. And in the parking structure, I can see an old pickup truck parked in the distance. And in the back of this pickup truck, I see this big, tall, gray trash can. And there's obviously something sticking out of the trash can. So I make my way up to the yellow tape. I lift the tape and I walk over. As I walk up to my command staff and the lead homicide investigators, I feel like I'm as small as an ant. And I feel like they're 20 feet tall, just peering down on me. I feel like they can smell my insecurity just bubbling out of the top of my uniform. And I say, hey, how's everything going? And they go, you know what to do? And I said, of course. And I tell everyone, you know, just go ahead and stand back. Let me do my walkthrough and I'll advise from there. So I slowly start making my way up to the pickup truck. And the whole way there, I'm praying, please God, please let this be a fake body. Because as I get closer, I can see it's a butt. It's a big butt just sticking out of the top of this trash can. But it's weird, like the color's off. It looks fake. And it's also October, it's near Halloween. So I'm thinking this has to be a prank. This is probably just some practical joke. Somebody just, you know, placed this there and they're having a good laugh right now because who the heck would just dump a body in a trash can in a parking structure? It's just, this doesn't happen. So I'm slowly making my way up there and I pray to God, please God, let this be fake. Let this be fake. Please let this be fake. And as I approach the truck and look in the bottom of the bed, I see this river of bright red blood just running down from the trash can. And I think, son of a bitch, it's real. So I turn to the crowd behind me and I go, yep, it's real. We got a real body here. And at that very moment, the investigation kicks off. I start processing the scene, doing my photographs, and we're working our way from the early morning hours all the way to about morning time now. And finally, you know, the coroner gets there and we are ready to actually move this trash can out of the trash can and lay it on the floor. So we lift this trash can up and it's heavy. This big body inside this trash can is really big. It's really heavy. And so we get it to the ground, we lay it down, gently tilt it on its side, and begin to slowly, slowly move this massive body out of the trash can. And when we finally get the victim out of the trash can, it's this big, giant man. He's about 300 pounds, but he just looks crumpled. His hands are crumpled underneath his face. His head has been bashed in. You have bits of skull and brain just oozing out the side of his head. On his back are these big, dark grease marks. It looks like his body has been drug around the ground somewhere, maybe like in a yard, maybe at an auto body shop somewhere. And his hands, he had naturally big hands to begin with, but they are swollen. They look like catcher's mitts and the knuckles are broken. And you know that he was trying to protect his face as he was getting those multiple blows to his head. So we slowly start documenting his body. We're documenting all his injuries. We're taking pictures. We're collecting swabs. And we then start to wrap up the investigation. It is now time to seal him up, send him off to the coroner's office to get an autopsy done. And we're going to make our way back to the station to continue the investigation. So we bring all the evidence back to the lab. But a quick side note, it's creepy. That big trash can, it had to come back to the lab. It was a big piece of evidence, and we needed it to just dry out because there was a large amount of blood in the bottom of it. So we placed it in our blood drying room inside our lab. And since I was a lead investigator on this case, that meant I was there really early in the morning, multiple days leading after it, and there really late at night. There was a lot of evidence to process. So every morning I would come to the lab and nobody would be there yet. I would check into the office, and in the office there's these big windows, and those windows looked into the lab. And from inside the lab, you could see another big window that looked directly into the blood drying room. And that was where the trash can was. And that trash can was just dark and filthy, and it just stood there. And it gave me the creeps. And it was almost as if the trash can was alive. So every time I entered the lab in the early morning with no one there, I'd turn the lights on and that trash can was just staring at me. And And every night when I was there by myself, the trash can was just right there staring at me, wondering, hey, when are you going to process me? Are you going to process him yet? And it just creeped me out. I even had to confirm with some of the girls in the labs. I was like, you know what? I do not like going in the lab right now with that trash can there. And they immediately all turned to me and nodded their heads yes. They said, I feel it. Do you feel it? We feel it. It's a presence. This trash can had this dark, nasty energy, and you felt it. So needless to say, none of us voluntarily went into the lab by ourselves that whole time that trash can was there. And I feel like that trash can was there for at least a month. So fast forward, detectives are now gaining intel. They're getting suspect information. They're closing on the location of where this guy was beaten to death. And before you know it, they have locked it in and we're getting ready to serve a search warrant. So it's now early morning hours. I'm tucked inside the van. I'm parked a couple of blocks away from the location, just waiting for this search warrant to kick off. Finally, when the sun rises, SWAT goes in. They surround the house. They have everybody surrounded. They get everybody out of the house. They clear it, and now they let us know, hey, we're ready for you to come in. So I make my way to the front of the house. And at this point, I'm still kind of shitting bricks because once again, I'm the lead. I'm there to tell people exactly what I need and what needs to be done so that we get the best evidence as possible. I put my gear on and I walk to the front of the house. And needless to say, the house from the outside is normal. As soon as I open the door, I can see the two owners of the house, the husband and wife, and they are pissed. They're sitting on a couch in the living room and they're glaring at me. They are so pissed off that we are in their house, turning it upside down. A quick description of the house. The living room looks normal aside from the giant stuffed mountain lion they have in there. And the kitchen looks normal. It's nice and clean. The upstairs bedroom, the master bedroom, looks definitely clean like a normal bedroom. But the rest of the rooms were absolutely disgusting. There's leftover rotting food. There's drug paraphernalia. There's just clothes and trash scattered throughout each of these rooms. And what I did notice is that there was a brand new baby carrier downstairs. There was a baby that was just born into this world and was actually living at this house. And it did break my heart a little to think that there is a baby that's going to be growing up at this environment. But needless to say, I make it to our main area, our main focus. The location is the backyard. It's this massive, massive backyard. I mean, huge. There's enough to have an RV back there. There was enough to have a big boat trailer with the boat, big fishing boat attached. There's cars, there's car parts, and it's just a massive backyard. And at this point, this is when I realized that I have to search this whole yard because we're looking for blood. Some of our detectives got information that our victim was beaten to death in that backyard, and it was our job to find the exact location. So early morning hours turn into midday, turn into the evening. We've now been out there for almost 12 hours and we haven't found a thing. I'm working with scientists. We're looking for latent blood and we almost give up. But wouldn't you know, within the last 20 minutes of our investigation, we're using a chemical called luminol. We spray it on the floor, this one area, and guess what? The floor lights up like a Christmas tree. Like you've seen in the crime scene shows when they use that chemical and it turns blue. It turned blue and we were so thrilled, meant that we probably just found the location of where our victim was beaten to death and where they had actually tried to clean up. But unfortunately, the only thing we didn't find, we couldn't find any blood yet. And I still didn't want to give up. I was determined. I was so determined to find something. And so we're searching and we're almost ready to wrap it up. And I kind of step away and I just happen to look at the trailer of this boat, and it's this blue metal railing. And now it's dark, so dark. And I shine my flashlight and I see this tiny little speck of dark red. It's the size of a sesame seed. And I'm like, huh, that looks like blood to me. And so I call the scientist over. I'm like, hey, check this out. And they're like, that little dot? And I'm like, yeah, that little dot. Look closer. And he goes, yeah, good luck. Probably not. I'm like, come on, let's just test it really quick, please. So he's like, all right, we're almost out of here, so let's just test it. So they put their chemical on it, they swab it, they test it, and guess what? It is positive for blood. The whole crew is excited. I'm in disbelief. They're in disbelief. It's the size of a sesame seed. So we take the whole sample. Everyone is happy. We wrap up the investigation and we call it quits for that day and we leave. A couple of weeks go by and the sergeant in the major crimes unit calls me over and he goes, hey, I need to talk to you for a second. And all I'm thinking is, great, I fucked up somewhere. Here we go. You know, like I'm just waiting. Like I must have missed something. My report's not this, you know, whatever the case may be. And he sits me down. He goes, hey, I just needed to tell you. I'm like, oh, here it comes. He goes, that blood you found was a match to our victim. It was the only key piece of evidence, physical evidence, that linked our victim to that location. Great job. Whew. I just looked at him and said, oh my God, yeah, thanks. Yeah, no problem. Like, just doing my job. He goes, yeah, great work. And I walk out of his office and I think my armpits were sweating, but my heart was pounding. But now it was pounding because I was so ecstatic inside. I could have jumped. I could have screamed. I was like, hell yeah, I found that blood. And so for me, finding that single drop of blood was like finding a needle in a haystack. I'll forever remember that moment. It reminds me that we're all human and we are going to have self-doubt. But you know what? Fake it till you make it. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed that story. Go find your needle in a haystack and kick ass. Till next time, have a great night. I'll see you soon.